Parshas Tetzave moves from the Mishkan, the building of the actual structure, which is what we ended with in Truma. Then we move into Tetzave, right? The bulk of Parshas Tetzave is about the clothing of the Kohanim, right? A lot of details are explained about the clothing, specifically the Kohen Gadol, right? His unique garments are the ones that actually have a lot of details to them, right? So exactly what the apron and the choshen and the stones and all those details, right? So it's the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, and the regular Kohen just wore half of those things and not the other half. So that is Parshas Tetzave. It happens to start, right, if we may or may not remember, that the actual bookends of Parshas Tetzave are actually a little bit different, because the beginning of Parshas Tetzave is actually discussing gathering the shemen, the oil for the menorah. So the beginning is actually about the menorah. And then at the end, so if we go to all the way at the end of Parshas Tetzave, we have a strange little addition that's the last aliyah of the Parsha, which starts in source one. So we have, Ve'asisa mizbeach miktar ketores. So by the way, you're also, after building, you know, after the command for all the kelim and so each of the things you put in the Mishkan, and then a description of the actual building of the Mishkan, the beams and the structure and the curtains and all of that stuff, right? And then we've described all of the clothing. So now the people who are serving in the Mishkan, all of the things that they have to wear and exactly what it should look like and every single detail. And then at the very end, Ve'asisa mizbeach miktar ketores. Also, you should make a mizbeach to burn ketores, to burn the incense. Ase shitim ta'aseoso. And you should make it out of ase shitim. And we had enough of a discussion about what ase shitim are and where they came from. But ase shitim, so it is wood, and it is covered in gold. Right? So this, as the Torah goes on to describe, this mizbeach is actually covered in gold, in contrast to the other mizbeach. So the big mizbeach is known as the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, right? They all have different, or not they all, the two of them have a few different names that are kind of like parallel to each other, right? So you have like Mizbeach HaNechoshes, which is the one on the outside. And then you have the Mizbeach HaZahav, and you have the gold one, which is on the inside, right? So this Mizbeach, which is not for burning animals and korbanos, so this is for Ketores. This is for the incense, which stays inside of the Heichal, which stays inside of the actual Mishkan. So this is the command of the Mizbeach HaKetores, and continues. Also, I guess I should throw in there, since I was saying overall, right, what are the things in Tetzave, right? They have the clothing. They also, there's a description right before the Mizbeach HaKetores, it's a little discussion about the Korban Tamid, so that does kind of slip in there also. So just to, if you're reading through it and you find there's another topic, there is another slight topic right before this. But that, to some extent, almost makes this like even more surprising of a topic, right? Because we have explained what the Mizbeach, what the Mishkan should look like, all the things that come inside, what the building looks like, what the Mizbeach looks like, everything that we've done, the Kohanim who are now going to serve in the Mishkan, everything that they should look like. And we've already started, like, and there's a korban that they bring every day, right? Which sounds like a little bit of the functioning of the Mizbeach, of the Mishkan, sorry. And then, at the end, one last note. Oh, by the way, P.S., don't forget, also, there's another Mizbeach that should go inside. All right, moving on, right? So this Mizbeach HaZahav, right, the big question that everyone wonders about is, V'asisa Mizbeach Miktar Ketores, you're supposed to build this Mizbeach. Why does it show up here? Why does it come? Why is it saved for the very end of Tetzave to start to discuss this special mizbeach? Why save it for the end? If it's one of the kelim, if it's one of the vessels that we use in the Mishkan and that is housed inside of the Mishkan, why don't we put it where all the other ones are, where all the other kelim are? At the beginning of Truma, we have the Aron and the Shulchan and the Menorah. Right, we should have said Aron Shulchan Menorah Mizbeach HaZahav, and then continued from there. Instead, this object, which goes inside of the building, is saved for all the way at the end of two parshios. Now we discuss the Mizbeach HaZahav. Right,
the last thing they burned.
in the process of the day of the avoda.
It's the last thing that the incense is the last thing they burn to get rid of the odors.
So is the mizbeach the last thing? So the ketor is the last thing. So it actually it's going to come up a little bit later that they're actually it describes when during like the process of the avoda, when during the service in the Mishkan you actually use it. And in fact, it's not like something that comes up at the end. It actually comes up in the middle of when you're doing other stuff, which is a little point that we're going to discuss, right? But it's not like, oh, use everything else, and then you'll also at the end need to use this, right? Really, it seems to be part of the use of everything else, right? It's like it seems to be used just as much as everything else. It's used at the same time as everything else. It's housed inside the Mishkan with everything else. But for some reason, the Torah throws it in, saves it for us as the last thing that we're going to talk about in describing the Mishkan. So that's the big question. Everyone likes to a lot of people ask that question, right? It's not not such an original question, right? Because it really jumps out. It really jumps out that you get to the end of the Parsha, and all of a sudden, we're back to discussing, you know, it's almost like we're at the beginning of Parsha's Truma again. So why would the Mizbeach HaZahav be brought all the way at the end of Parshas Tetzaveh? What is the what's the point? What's the Torah trying to get at? What's the message it's trying to give us, right? Or for what reason would the Torah save the Mizbeach HaZahav all the way for the end? So I'd like to propose two approaches to explain why the Mizbeach might be here at the end. Two thoughts. Okay, and the first one, they both kind of revolve around the beginning of this idea. So Parshas Tetzaveh has a unique attribute, right, that makes it stand out from all the Parshios, starting from Parshas Shmos all the way till the end of the Torah, right? We might know that Parshas Tetzaveh has something that none of the other Parshios have. Right, exactly. Parsha. Right. So what it has is that it is missing something that every other Parsha has. So we might know that Parshas Tetzaveh is the only Parsha in the Torah, starting from Parshas Shmos, in which Moshe is not mentioned. So Moshe is addressed, right? It does say, V'ata Tetzaveh, you should command. Who's the you? Obviously, we're talking to Moshe, right? That is implied, but Moshe is never mentioned. His name doesn't show up in the whole Parsha. Why is that? So as just one example, right, the Baal HaTurim quotes some of these famous ideas, just to see it. So, V'tat Tetzaveh, lo hizkir kan Moshe, b'shem. Right, Moshe is not mentioned by name. Why? Al shem she'amar, because Moshe said previously, or not previously, I guess, depending on whether or not this event happens after our Parsha. We mentioned last time that the order of the Parshios is a little bit of a machlokes, but because Moshe said, "Mechini na misifracha ki kila," misifracha, because Moshe said during the situation of the golden calf, he said, you know, well, if you're going to do that, then just erase me completely, right? Erase me from the book. So because Moshe said, erase me from the book, ki kila las chacham afilu al tanai hi ba'a, and we have this general principle that the curse of a chacham, if somebody says something, a bad thing, even though it's al tanai, even though the point is Moshe saying, erase me if you destroy the nation, right? There's a tanai, there's a condition. So even so, still that thing comes true in some way, right? So this comes up in different ways. Gemara has examples in different places it's one of these, like, be careful what we say, right? Because even if we say it on condition, even if we say it for a particular purpose, right, that it still may come true in some way. So Moshe said, erase me from the book. Okay, so he was erased partially in some way from the book. So that's the first answer. V'yesh mefarshim lefi sharatza letzavos al inyan habegadim la'aron. Another reason some explain is that this parsha is about the command of the clothing. Umoshe asid lios kohen gadol, and Moshe originally was supposed to be the kohen gadol. V'hayelo agmas nefesh lahaskiro etzel habigadim shayur uyimlo, and would make Moshe sad, would make him upset if he were mentioned along with the clothing that originally were supposed to be his, v'nilkechu mimenu, but were taken from him. Right, so this idea also was like a broader Sefer Shmos idea that Moshe really was originally supposed to be a Kohen. This goes back to Parsha Shmos when Moshe is talking to Hashem at the Sneh. So during that event at the burning bush, one of the times that Moshe goes back and forth with Hashem, right, Chazal say, and this is when Moshe lost it. Right, this is when Moshe would have been the Kohen. He would have been the Kohen Gadol, but now he's not going to be. Right, so that event from earlier, it's coming back now because now that since Moshe was supposed to, it's not nice to mention him with all the other clothing of the Kohen Gadol. So there are some other reasons that are suggested out there for why Moshe is not in Parshas Tetzaveh. Okay, so those are some of the more famous ones. So one approach to Moshe, you know, not being in the Parsha is because it is a fulfillment of his curse. Right, of Mechini Nami Sifracha, or it's because it's, you know, kind of helping, Moshe would feel bad if he were mentioned. Okay, Rabbi Sachs, Rabbi Jonathan Sachs in Covenant and Conversation, so he spins it a little differently. He quotes three explanations, and he points out all three explanations focus on the absence. Right, so as we said, what all of these have is that they are missing Moshe. Right, so they're all explaining why is Moshe missing. However, perhaps the simplest explanation is that Tetzaveh is dedicated to a presence, one that has a decisive influence on Judaism and Jewish history. Right, so it could be, Rabbi Sachs says, that we're focusing on what's not there, but really the point is not what's missing. It's not to think about, oh, why is Moshe, why would Moshe be sad, right? But the focus we're supposed to have is, well, no. What in place of Moshe, what is the focus, right? What are we supposed to be looking at? That Judaism is unusual in that it recognizes not one form of religious leadership, but two, the Navi and the Kohen. So if the Navi here, the prophet and the priest, right, and the prophet is what's missing, right, so it's because we, in this Parsha, are focusing on the priest, on the Kohen. The figure of the prophet has always captured the imagination. He or she is a person of drama, speaking truth to power, right? Unafraid to challenge kings and courts, right? That's what we read throughout Sifrei the Nevi'im, right, is that they have to speak up and they're up against the entire society or even going directly to the king and having that conversation, right? No other type of religious personality has had the impact as the prophets of Israel, of whom the greatest was Moshe. Right, Moshe is the Av HaNevi'im. He is the prime example of a Navi. But the priests, by contrast, were for the most part quieter figures, apolitical, serving in the sanctuary rather than in the spotlight of political debate. And eventually, in history, when those two things start to get mixed, right, it is specifically a problem when the position of the Kohen Gadol is a political position that is, you know, bought and sold, right? So it's like the exception that demonstrates the rule, right? Like that, right? But the Kohen, even the Kohanim, they also had a political role. No, that when they did that, we know that was the problem. Like that was when things went off the rails, right? But in essence, the role of the Kohen is not to do that job, okay? Yet they, no less than the prophets, sustained Israel as a holy nation. Indeed, so we have the Navi and we have the Kohen. And as important as the Navi is, we also have to recognize that we are summoned to become Mamleches Kohanim, a kingdom of priests. There was no such declaration that we should be a nation of prophets, right? A people of prophets. He says parenthetically, right? We do know that story where Moshe says, "Oh, if only everybody were a Navi." That's in the Eldad and Medad story where Moshe does kind of wistfully wish that if only everyone were a Navi, right? But like that's not the reality. That's not the state of things, and that's not even what we're commanded as from the Torah, right? So we have the Navi and we have the Kohen, and we are in a sense Mamleches Kohanim. We are enjoined to be a nation of Kohanim. So perhaps, Rabbi Sachs says, the focus of Tetzaveh is not why is Moshe gone, but a different lens. We're supposed to be asking what is supposed to be coming out of this is that we are focusing not on the role of the Navi, but in this parsha we are looking at the Kohen. So if we zero in on the Kohen, on the in this case, as we said, Tetzaveh is also describing specifically the Kohen Gadol, right? So we have a description of all of the eight articles of clothing of the Kohen Gadol, of Aaron HaKohen, right? And the Kohanim more broadly, so they take some of those, they take four out of those eight, but the focus in this parsha is on Aaron, the Kohen Gadol. So let's discuss Aaron a little bit and look at it from that perspective. So if this parsha's Tetzaveh is really one of the Kohanim, so what do we know about Aaron? I kind of ran out of space, so I didn't bring the Mishnah on the page. It is a famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. So the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, oh, you could actually see that I had it on the page because in source 4 I wrote Derech Chaim Sham, but then I took out the Mishnah, so it doesn't actually say where the Mishnah is. But this is in Pirkei Avos. So the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, during the first Perek, when it's describing the different pairs, the Zugos, in the beginning of Pirkei Avos, so one of the pairs is Hillel and Shammai, and Hillel said, Heve mi talmidav shel Aaron, right? Heve mi talmidav shel Aaron HaKohen. You should be a student of Aaron. What does it mean to be a student of Aaron? Ohev shalom, verodev shalom. You should love peace and chase after peace. Ohev es habrios. You should love everybody. Umikarvan latorah, and bring them close to the Torah. So that is what it means to be a student of Aaron. Aaron is this trait of loving peace and chasing it and bringing people closer to God. Why is that the role of Aaron? Why is Aaron the figurehead of Shalom in the world? Why is he the emblem of Shalom? So the Maharal elaborates a little bit on that idea. He describes why it's important that Aaron, who is also the Kohen Gadol, right? It's not a coincidence, the Maharal says, that Aaron, who serves as the Kohen Gadol, also is the one who loves Shalom and chases after it and brings people together. Right? It doesn't just happen to be that Aaron has both of those traits. So in Derech Chaim, so Derech Chaim is the commentary of the Maharal on Pirkei Avos. So this is Perek Aleph, Mishnah Yudbez. I think sometimes the numbering in Pirkei Avos comes out kind of funny, where like some get squished together and not, but it's Yudbez. So that's where you'll find this the Mishnah and this Maharal. So he explains the following: Aval Perish, Ma She Amar Heve Mi Talmidav Shel Aaron. When the Mishnah tells us we should be like a student of Aaron, Ki Aaron Haya Kohen Gadol, because Aaron was the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol has a special role, Lios Mikasher Yisrael, Achi Yisrael Amechad. The Kohen Gadol is the one who connects everybody into being one nation. So the role of the Kohen Gadol is to bring everyone together. Vizek Kasher Hayalahem Mishkan Echad. And this is because, right, this is we have one temple, we have one mishkan, umizbeach echad, and one altar, hefecha umos, different than other nations. Right? If we're familiar with that language, he's about to refer to it, right? This is actually what Rashi brings down in a conversation between Moshe and Korach. So this Kamosha Amru b'Medrash, like the Medrash says, Kasher Haya Korach Cholek al Kuhunas Aaron, when Korach came to complain about Aaron's priesthood, right? And he said, "Ki kol ha'ida kulam kedoshim." Why do we need Aaron? Everybody's holy, right? Why is he the Kohen? You could be the Kohen, and you could be the Kohen. Everyone could be the Kohen. So Amar Lahem Moshe. Moshe says, "Amar Lahem Moshe Rabbeinu, Alav Shalom." So this is what Moshe said: "Bedarke goyim kohanim harbe." In other nations, there are a lot of high priests. Kulam miskavtim bevayis echad. And they're all, you know, they can all be gathered together in one place. But they're all you know, the ones at the top. They're all the most special. V'anu in lanu ela Hashem echad v'Torah achas u'mishpat echad v'kohen gadol echad. Right, but we have, just like we have one God, and one Torah, and one law, and one Kohen Gadol. Right, that the Kohen Gadol, even though there are, right, there are many Kohanim, right, but among the Kohanim, there is still a Kohen Gadol, right? So Moshe is saying to Korach, just because everybody could be a Kohen, right, just because we're all, everyone is Kodesh, everyone's holy, right, still there is a place for one Kohen Gadol as the focal point that everything revolves around. So there's one God, there's one Torah, and there's one Kohen Gadol who's running everything. So Ukumoshu beferish Rashi Zal, right, as Rashi brings down. So that idea of the Kohen Gadol is specifically to be just as there is one law and there is one Torah, there's one Kohen Gadol, umizeh tireh, ki al yidei ha-Kohen Gadol, shehu echad, through the Kohen Gadol, who is an individual, bezeh nireh ki Yisrael am echad. So that also is what makes us one nation, right? A nation that is one. V'haya Aaron, so we're all, if we think about like tefillah and davening, right? We don't daven, right? It's not that everyone has their own temple that they daven towards. We're all praying towards the same point. That point in the middle where the Kodesh HaKadoshim is, where the Kohen Gadol goes, where he serves, right? Where he leads the Beis HaMikdash, right? That is where everybody is pointing. So it is what is mikasher. It is what ties everybody together. V'haya Aaron mikasher u'me'ached Yisrael ad shehim echad. And Aaron is the one who brings everyone together until we are one, right? That's we, the plurality of the Jewish people, right, are echad, are really one. Kasher haya kohen echad, just as there is one priest. Ulekach, and therefore, haya Aaron rodev shalom bein ishu bein chavero. And therefore, Aaron's place in the world is to find peace, to bring peace between people. Shelo yum bechulakim bemachlokas, so that they are not divided, so that they're not arguing, so that they can actually be together. Rakiyu amechad, but that they should actually be one nation. So why is it that Aaron is the Kohen Gadol and also rodev shalom? Because those are the same role. Part of the job of the Kohen Gadol is that he is me'ached. He unifies the entire nation. So Aaron also literally unifies people. He's the one who brings people together. U'mekarvan la'Torah, he goes on to say, right, not only creating shalom, you know, between people, but also between the nation and God, right? That all of this is parts of ways of bringing together. So Aaron HaKohen is the one who takes all of the disparate pieces of the Jewish people, right, but brings them together in one Mishkan, in one service of Hashem, that this, even though each of the Shvatim stands on its own, right, and each one has its own place in the land of Israel, and each one has its own role, perhaps, in the nation, right, that there are each, and within that, right, each person, right, also has a different place and a different role in a different family. So all of those different pieces, but all of them are mikasher to mikushar, right? They are all tied together through the Mishkan, through the one Kohen Gadol, that everything comes back to this one point, and that is the job of the Kohen Gadol, the one who brings the entire nation together so that we are not different pieces, but we are in fact echad. We are in fact one.
We see that also by the, you know, the responsibility of the Kohen Gadol and the whole Ari Miklat program, that, you know, he's responsible for the entire Jewish people. And he, in what way was he responsible that someone has to go? Because he should have created a better environment that people would not come to be involved in these.
Right. So even the responsibility of the Kohen Gadol towards, even in that case, right, even the accidental murders in the system of Ari Miklat, right, that that we know that accidental murder, whatever that means, right? It's like a funny phrase, but that person, right, that his sentence is based off of the life of the Kohen Gadol, right? So there's this connection between the responsibility of the Kohen Gadol to create an environment that that is not dividing people, but is not one where you could be so negligent as to for something like that to happen. Right? Again, the line of negligence. I'm not talking like halachically. That's a little bit of like a discussion. Right? The line between if it's too negligent, then it doesn't count. But that idea of his responsibility to the nation. And it revolves around this idea of creating harmony and creating that the connections between people and getting rid of the things that divide us. So that is the actual job of the Kohen Gadol. The Meshech Chachma is going to explain for us. This is actually a source that we've seen before. We've seen maybe not these exact paragraphs, but it was in... I looked it up. I think it was 2 years ago in Kitisa. Maybe used part of it, but it's an important idea. It's an important source for the Meshech Chachma. We were looking at a different aspect of it, but this is in Parshas Devarim, all the way at the end of Parshas Devarim. It's kind of like it's on the Haftorah there. So he starts with a pasuk from the Haftorah. Lo sosifu havi minchas shav kitoras toeva hili. So it says, stop bringing me this meaningless mincha, this meaningless offering. It's a disgusting incense. It's a ketores toeva, right? So don't stop bringing this meaningless offering, this disgusting ketores. That's what Hashem is telling the nation. So the Meshech Chachma explains what the issue is. Why is Hashem say, what's wrong with this mincha? Why is the ketores a ketores toeva? So the Meshech Chachma explains, V'hine, inin hamikdash le'ached klalius Yisrael ulevavehen el makom echad. Right, so building off of Chazal, and this same idea that we saw in the Maharal, right, so the Meshech Chachma says, the mikdash, right, just as the Medrash says that we have one Mishkan, and in the Mishkan is one Kohen Gadol, so the Mikdash unites, it brings together all of Bnei Yisrael and all of our hearts to one place. Kemoshe Amru, Haya Omeid, Vechule, Nimtzu Kol Yisrael Mechuvanim, Eslibam, L'makom Echad. Right? And just as the Mishnah tells us, that, or the Breisa elaborates, that when we daven, we all face one place, right? All of our hearts are facing the exact same location. Ulek velachin, tamid ha'isasham ha'hanhaga ha'nisit, kemo she'manu asara nisim shenasu beveis ha'mikdash. That happens to be why the Beis HaMikdash, which is the place that unifies and unites all of the Jewish people, it was also a place of miracles. Why was it, how could it be, that we could have one place in the world where miracles were standard, they always happened, that there were 10 miracles, as the Mishnah says, that happened every day in the Beis HaMikdash. How could there be miracles all the time? Ulaharos, af shekol prati'i bifnei atzmo, eno roi lihios mushkach prati, bian haga prati'is, bilti tivis. Right? It demonstrates to us that an individual person may not be fitting to have a miraculous form of providence, right? That most of us, we're regular people, we're not so great and fantastic and amazing and perfect that God has to will step in for every little thing directly to make it to move the laws of nature, right? So an individual person, Hashem's not stepping in all the time because we're not perfect. We are who we are, and we're trying to get better, but we are not. We are an individual, and we have our own failings. B'chol zeh hakesher haklali me'am Yisrael. But despite that, on the whole, right, klal Yisrael, the Jewish people as a whole, ro'i hu liyos mushkach bashkach hanisid. But the nation as a whole is fit, is deserving of a miraculous form of hashgacha, miraculous providence, shesham ein pegam, because there's no lack, there's nothing missing, shekula ma'alim reyach nechoach, because everyone together creates a reyach nechoach, everyone creates this beautiful smell, as it's described, of the ketores, zebi yiraso, vezebi tzidkaso, because some people are thriving in their fear of God, and some people exemplify their righteousness, v'zeh be'ahavaso li'Yisrael, and one person's great love for his fellow Jewish person, v'zeh b'masas yado, v'zeh b'torah. So right, so everybody, right? Any one person is not perfect, but the Jewish people as a whole, if you take them as a unit, so then you have all of the best of Torah learning and chesed and fear of God and love of each other, right? So as a unit, as one Klal Yisrael, so then we are perfect. We have all of those things. So the Beis HaMikdash, the point that actually brings everyone together, the place where we are viewed as one, there we are perfect. Of course we should have miracles. That's a place where it's normal for God to step in, where for us to have miracles, even on a daily basis. And if I just add this one line, he throws in this idea of Reach Nechoach, which he elaborates, and I couldn't bring the entire piece, it's a long piece, right? That this is one of the ideas that is alluded to, Chazal say, in the Ketores. That the Ketores, which itself has a lot of different elements, and one of them, the Chelbana, actually smells pretty bad, right? The Chelbana actually does not smell that great. But when you put it all together in this recipe, so all of those different pieces together create the Reach Nechoach. They create the most delicious smell we could imagine. That's the Ketores. The Ketores is this idea that even each individual may stand on its own, but when you put them all together, when you find the right mixture and you put them together, then you have this Reach Nechoach LaHashem. Yes?
But Yoni, when you use the word perfect...
Yes.
Do you really mean perfect? I mean, when you say all together we're perfect, doesn't that imply that we're finished as striving for being better or et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, yeah. So there is an issue with saying that anything is perfect, right? Perfect implies that it is static, that it is done, that it's finished, right? This is an important part. Also, to go back to Korach, right? That part of perhaps if we look at Rav Hirsch there, part of the way he describes Korach's problem, we've been talking about how Korach's issue was, oh, everybody can be a Kohen and we can spread it around, right? The Rav Hirsch, he describes that the idea of kula eda kulam kedosha means that Korach saying everybody is already holy, right? But the Torah doesn't say that. The Torah says kedoshim to you should become holy, right? But if I say that I'm already there, then there's nowhere else to go, right? So that's Korach's issue. So there definitely is a potential danger in saying where something is perfect. Maybe I'm just using the wrong word, but there is still an element that even though, right, this element of perfection only exists like in a very specific way in the universe, right? The Klal Yisrael as brought together in the Beis HaMikdash. Any given person, right, outside of that context is not, and we are all trying to strive for more, right? And part of that, even those things that we are great at, as we contribute to the nation, could be better. So maybe I could take back the word perfect, but there is this element that if you put together all of the pieces, they support each other in such a way that they are much more. The other way we use this, it becomes like a little bit of like a cliche, right? That we are more right. The nation is more than the sum of its parts, which it can be like an overused statement. But the point is that that's a reality. Like that is true, right? It is a fact that even though any given individual may have, certain strengths and weaknesses, and if you stick together the Jewish people in a room, right, in the Beis HaMikdash, right, you don't just have a lot of people with pluses and minuses. What you have is a coherent whole that is the nation, that is Am Yisrael. So that difference between just a bunch of individual people and a nation, right, an Am Echad. So that difference, the Meshech Chachma says, is the difference between a real mincha and a bad mincha, and between real ketores and bad ketores. And that's exactly why the pasuk that he starts with in source 5, this from the Haftorah, why God says, you're bringing me a bad mincha. It's a terrible ketores. Why? Because a mincha and a ketores, what both of those ideas reflect is this idea of klalius, of being a nation, of being together, of being one, and not a bunch of individuals, not a bunch of single people, right? So in paragraph, what I marked it off, Aleph and Beis. So in source 5, right, Lefisha tzibur hu bi klaliyu so kamo yachid shehu ish echad. The nation as a whole is like an individual person. It is as if it is one person, right? When we talk about the tzibur, right, when we talk about a korban tzibur, I could bring an individual korban, and also there's the korban tamid, which is also mentioned in this week's Parsha, right? So there's a korban tamid, which is one korban that's brought on behalf of the entire Jewish people. That korban that's brought on behalf of the entire Jewish people is not a korban of where we are partners. It's not where we have a lot of individual people and we all paid money for this korban. A korban tzibur is a different thing. It is the korban of one nation, of a tzibur. The tzibur is not a lot of people who happen to be in the same place. It has a different reality to it. So this korban tzibur, right, is different. That's why a mincha points out, when it comes to a mincha cannot be brought by partners. It can only be brought by a yachid, by an individual, or by the tzibur, because the tzibur is itself a yachid. The tzibur is one. Tzibur counts as one thing, right? We perhaps like play with this a little bit when we talk about like the idea of a minyan, right? Perhaps this is part of the idea of a minyan, is that like 10 people is the first number at which individual numbers become one unit of a different number, right? Like the idea of davening b'tzibur is one where you have 9 people. When you hit 10, right, we know the way that counting works in gematria, right? Tens is now a new unit that you use, and you count in tens, right? So 10 is individuals, but it also is now a different thing that is one thing. It is a 10, right? A 10 is not just 10 of those thing. It is a 10, right? So in our like mikdash me'at, right, like in our shoals, when we daven, that idea of a minyan is this line, this tension, this back and forth between these individuals, but in a way that they come together, that they are themselves one. They are echad, right? And that is the role of ketores. When is ketores a ketores toeva? When is it a disgusting ketores? If you break apart all of those pieces, then you smell the chelbana, right? Then you smell that thing that smells gross. It's only a beautiful ketores. It's only reach nechoach when they are echad, when you actually put it all together, so then it's beautiful. And when is it disgusting? If you actually look at every individual piece and you separate them, that is the ketores toeva. That is what the Navi is decrying here, that the nation is scattered, they're separated, they're all on their own, they're falling apart. Because what happens when you fall apart? Then we look at every individual on their own. When you look at every individual, so then, yeah, there are lots of problems when you look at every individual, right? And then it becomes a ketores toeva. It's only when you put them all together that you are able to say there's a reach nichoach. So this idea of the ketores specifically reflects this idea that the individuals, when you are an echad, when you come together, then you have this reach nichoach. You have this special attribute of being a beautiful combination of oneness that happens where? In the Mikdash, and happens through who? Through the Kohen Gadol. Right? So as the Maharal says, that is the essence of the role of the Kohen Gadol. That is the Ohev Shalom. It is the one who is Mikasher everybody into being Echad. So this idea of Ketores is the idea of the Kohen Gadol. So perhaps, to go back to our original question, why is it that the Mizbeach HaZahav is thrown in, is saved for the end of Parshas Tetzaveh. Perhaps it is to draw home this idea that, as Rabbi Sack says, in Tetzaveh, we're not focusing on why Moshe is gone. We're focusing on the Kohen Gadol, right? Focus on what's there. This is the time to think about what is the priest, what is the Kohen, right? The Kohen is the one who is me'ached the nation, who brings everyone together. And when you have that, then you can bring Ketores, right? So the Ketores, the Mizbeach HaZahav, that altar on which you bring the incense, maybe it has to be saved for the end of this Parsha, because only when you have that Kohen Gadol, right, we see that the role of the Kohen Gadol is one of Shalom, of bringing everybody together, and when you bring it together, then you have a proper Ketores, unlike what the Navi was describing in his time, where you have a Ketores Toeva, but really the Ketores is one that specifically needs the Kohen Gadol in order to bring everyone together. So that is idea number one. Idea number one, that that it's specifically the job of the Kohen to bring everyone together into the Mishkan. It's Ma'achid, and only then can you have this Ketores that we want. The Torah wants to draw out that idea that the Ketores depends on that, on this this Miyuchad person who is Mikasher everyone together in order to create this sense, and that again in for us reflects this different idea about a tzibor. This idea of being part of a nation is not that we have a lot of people, but that there are a lot of people, and also we have this oneness, which is different. It's a different thing to say that we are a nation and not just a lot of individuals who work together. Right? It's more than that. So that's the idea of a tzibor. So that's suggestion, that's idea number one. In a slightly, a second idea, if we look at the description through the rest of, right, in Perek Lamed starts by telling us, you should make a Mizbeach HaKetores. What are you supposed to do with it? So this is in source 6, on page 2, V'ektir alav Aaron Ketores Samim. Aaron should burn the Ketores. When? Baboker, every morning, right? Each morning he should burn the Ketores. Behetivo es haneros yaktirana. When he's preparing the candles, that's when he should burn it. Uvehalos aron es haneros bein harbayim. And when he is preparing the candles in the afternoon, or when he's lighting the candles, Yaktirena. Then he also should. He also brings the Ketores. He burns the Ketores. Ketores tamid lefnei Hashem ledorusechem. The font on these psukim is a little funny, that was not on purpose. I'm not trying to highlight anything. It just for some reason didn't work out right. But when does he burn it in the morning? When he prepares the candles. And when does he burn it in the afternoon? When he lights the candles. Okay, so one is behetivo es haneros, right? The being meitiv the neros is fixing, cleaning out, and fixing the preparing the candles, and ha'alos haneros, as we in Parshas Be'aloscha, like la'alos the candles, which is a funny language, but it means to light the candles. So when do you burn the Ketores? Well, the Torah gives us another avoda, right, that it is connected to. So it doesn't just say, oh, you burn it in the morning and you burn it in the afternoon. It says, you burn it in the morning when you take care of the menorah. And also, you do it in the afternoon when you take care of the menorah, which is a funny little connection, right? Why does it need to throw that in there, right? So, refers, we're not going to go through like all the details, but he's going to refer to, right, the fact that Chazal then say, what exactly is the process? The Torah clearly says that the Ketores happens somewhere along with the menorah. So Rav Hirsch explains, the service of the lights and the offerings of the incense are intertwined. This is in the newer translation, by the way. So if you look it up, the old one might look slightly different. And this is highly significant, for they symbolize the nation's work of the spirit and the perfection of deeds on the highest level. Right? So the Mizbeach he has built throughout the rest of this perek, that if the Mizbeach is at the end, the Mizbeach HaZahav, the incense altar, that means we have reached the pinnacle, the top point of our description of the Mishkan, right? If it's here at the end, that must mean we've been building all the way to this, right? So this, we are talking about the work of the Spirit and the perfection of deeds on the highest level. Moreover, Dishun Mizbeach HaPanimi, the preparation of the altar for the offering of this Kitores, precedes Hatavas HaNeros. So it comes right before you actually, right? It says, in the morning you do it when you prepare the candles. So apparently you do the, right? He's saying you prepare the Mizbeach right before you prepare the menorah. Right, they're sequential, right, one after the other. According to the view of the Chachamim, the morning offering of the incense takes place in the midst of Hatavas HaNeros. So, according to the Chachamim, then we actually burn the Ketores in the midst of right, while we're in the middle of preparing the Neros. So it says, Mafsik b'Ketores bein Hatavas Chamesh Neros l'Hatavas Shtei Neros. So you prepare five of the candles, and then you burn the Ketores, and then you prepare the others, right? It's like literally, it's literally right in the middle of working on the menorah. So the Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Gadol doesn't have to necessarily do every single avoda, but we're going to use Kohen Gadol as the example of avoda, right? So Aaron is preparing the candles, then he stops, and he goes to burn the Ketores, and then he comes back to finish the menorah, right? So these are really intertwined, right? It's not just giving us like a description in time. Oh, by the way, you do it around the time of the menorah, right? It's because it wants to tie those two things together. The afternoon incense offering too, excuse me, precedes the lighting of the lamps, right? Because the pasuk says, oh, you do this right before the menorah, right? So again, the point is that the psukim and Chazal elaborating on that, on the psukim, right, are clearly trying to connect, to pull together the Mizbeach HaZahav and the candles. In Judaism, the highest moral perfection of conduct is the purpose of intellectual edification. So the menorah which represents chachma, which the light of understanding, the light of intellectual thinking, it only reaches its perfection along with moral conduct. The Ketores, which is our actions, our behavior in the world, right? Just it's a higher form even than the sacrifices outside of the big mizbeach, right? Where we talk about our avoda, our service of God, is the korbanos. We talk about that as the example of service of you know, action and serving God in the world. The mizbeach hazahav is the highest level of that, right? It's not even animals. It's the Ketores. He describes how it's like this Mizbeach is described as like the corner of the Mizbeach HaNechoshes. It's like the corner of the outside Mizbeach. It's the highest point, right? It's the thing that is raised out of the big Mizbeach. So the Mizbeach HaZahav is this moral perfection. It is only such perfection, this moral perfection, that gives value to intellectual development. Intellectual development is only meaningful in as much as it leads to proper behavior. In the Jewish conception of the holiness of life, genius is no license for non-observance of the laws of morality. On the contrary, supreme morality is the test of supreme intellect, right? If you truly are a genius, if you truly understand, if you're truly working towards understanding, then it also goes hand in hand with proper behavior. And only in it and by it are the nobility and purity of the intellect demonstrated and proven. So only through proper conduct can we even say that your intellect is pure and is noble, right? So being a genius, being a philosopher is no excuse for the wrong behavior. And they must go together. So not without reason does Parshas Tetzaveh, which is the Parsha of the consecration of the Jewish priesthood, right? And to draw out, as Rabbi Sachs pointed out, right? We are Mamleches Kohanim, right? So what does it mean to be a Kohen? What does the Parsha start with? It begins with the service of the menorah, and it concludes with the service of the Ketores. And the Torah says those are supposed to be combined, right? You work towards that intellectual and that better understanding, but that always has to go hand in hand with perfecting our behavior and getting better in our moral conduct. Both together in close combination make the Kohen a Kohen. That is truly what it means to be a Kohen, is not to be, right, this Kohen who's in the Mikdash or in the Mishkan, right, and is set apart as a leader, is set apart as the one who gets to get close to God, who's learning Torah, who is this, again, this philosopher leader. It doesn't stop there. It has to end. It has to climax in Ketores. It has to be in the actual behavior as well, not just with the menorah, not just with the shining light of understanding, but also with the behavior. And that perhaps is a danger of sorts, right, out in the world, right? This idea that those who are becoming better, those who are the leaders, those who, right, the Kohanim, who are set apart from everybody else, right? It's not about them in their ivory tower, but that they also have this role. We have, if we think about Aaron, right, that Aaron, who is the one who's set aside from everybody else, but he's the Ohev Shalom, right, to a different spin on this idea, right, that no, he's the Ohev Shalom who actually specifically has the best relationship with everybody else. He is the one who is the closest to everybody. And being a master of Torah doesn't give us license to ignore other people or to do it any less of our behavior, right? There's one little note at the end, right, of this, the way it plays out. Someone just mentioned the study, and I happen to have found it in this book. I didn't expect to find it, but they took people, groups of three, and they randomly assigned one to be the boss. And what he was going to do was, two of them were going to do some research, and they were going to write up their little thing, and then the boss, the guy who was in charge, was going to rate their work. Right, so who became the boss? He was randomly chosen, right? It was something that was like, he had nothing special about him. They saw, you know, they drew lots out of a hat or whatever. They drew names out of a hat, and then he became the boss. So what happens? That after working, they put out a plate of, what is it? Plate contains five cookies, right? Which means that, like, if people are eating, like, there's no one, in theory, you should be polite and not necessarily take the last cookie. And they checked, right, that the person who was randomly put in charge was much more likely to eat more of the cookies. And they actually, like, had people rating, like, videos of, like how, like, did they lick their lips? Did they, like, how, like, grossly did they eat as well? So they talked about this idea, right, that they found. This comes up, this is like in a series of different studies, but it's just a cute little example, right, of this idea that, like, when people are in power, right, when you think of yourself as the elite, so then one of the things that starts to fall by the wayside is your behavior towards other people, right? So it's just to draw that idea that sometimes, even if you randomly assign a boss, right, what comes with that is an impulsivity to ignore the needs of others or to forget that other people matter, right? Even in very little subtle ways where you're just taking the extra cookie. But again, like, we can see that. But this idea that being the Kohen, being the intellectual elite, right, is not about an ivory tower that is removed from everybody, but specifically Aaron as the Ohev Shalom, who is in the people, among the people, bringing people together, and that this idea of the Ketores is in fact the peak, the highest point of our whole Mishkan experience, is to say that the Kohanim are bookended not just by the menorah, not just by that intellectual edification, but that it also goes with the highest moral perfection of conduct as well. And that's why we have this Mizbeach at the end, because it's really to bookend these two parts of the Kohen Gadol, as the pasuk says that the avoda of each of them has to play off of each other. That you need to have both of these in order to do it.
Too bad we don't all live together.
Yeah. So broadly we said the Mizbeach Ketores is put at the end of Parshas Tetzaveh. Right, so why is it thrown at the end of Parshas Tetzaveh? Why is it saved until then? So two broad ideas. One is that the Mishkan, as the place of of being Am Echad, that's the place that unifies the entire Jewish people. That is, in fact, the role of the Kohen Gadol as being the one who unifies everybody. That's Parshas Tetzaveh. And therefore, when you unify, when you are unified, then that is the essence of Ketores, because Ketores also, each individual piece of the recipe may not smell great, but together they make that Reach Nichoach. So that's one answer. And the second idea is that it is saved for the end because we are, as Rav Hirsch says, we are surrounding the idea of the Kohen with the menorah and the Ketores, that you always have to have both of these pieces. You have to have the intellectual side, and you have to have the moral conduct side, and all of those together are really what makes the Kohen the Kohen. And as Rabbi Sachs points out, whatever we say about the Kohanim is something for us to think about, as we are called to be a Mamlechas Kohanim.